Thank you, Tristan. Can you guys hear me okay? All right. So, good afternoon. My name is Mifruz Haq, and I'm going to talk to you about an exposure investigation that we conducted in an office facility in Virginia. I'm going to talk to you about the logistics of our investigation, as well as some unique challenges we faced because of this investigation itself. So going right into it, in August of 2016, VDH was notified of a patient that reported a persistent cough, a fever, fatigue, and chest pains. Furthermore, the patient reported exhibiting these symptoms for at least a year prior to this notification. The patient had an abnormal chest x-ray and tested positive for 3 consecutive AFB smears. A positive culture and a gene expert test confirmed diagnosis of active pulmonary TB disease. So upon confirmation, the TB patient was placed on transmission precautions and was restricted from returning to work. So before I begin talking about the investigation, I want to talk briefly a little bit about what is TB. So TB is a mycobacterial infection that is commonly affects the organs of the respiratory tract, but it can occur anywhere in the body. TB is primarily spread through inhalation of droplet nuclei that contain TB bacteria. It can be produced by persons with active respiratory disease. TB disease is different from TB infection by the presence of clinical symptoms and or an abnormal chest x-ray. A person with latent TB infection, or LTBI, is considered, usually has a positive skin test or a positive blood test, and a regular normal chest x-ray. They do not have symptoms of active TB disease, and they're not considered contagious. Persons at increased risk of infection include household contacts, close friends, and coworkers who daily breathe in potentially infectious air from a person with undiagnosed or untreated tuberculosis. So we began our investigation by determining the period of communicability. Because of the long range between symptom manifestation and clinical diagnosis, this period was really difficult to determine. Using the VDH contact investigation algorithm, we determined that a contact investigation for this patient was needed. Once initiated, we conducted an overall risk assessment based on the patient interview. This included looking at reported close contacts and prioritizing their needs based on length of exposure as well as presence of TB risk factors. As part of the risk assessment, we also visited the facility where this patient worked. So this was a large financial firm which had over 1,000 employees. The campus consisted of 5 buildings, a gym, a large cafeteria, and something they call a chill center. So employees often reported going from building to building and on a daily basis for meetings and just for recreational activities. The index patient reported working on the 3rd floor of building number 3. Finally, we also did a risk assessment of the ventilation system and the air circulation patterns of the facility. So this here is the contact investigation algorithm that we used to determine when to initiate the investigation. The challenge we faced using this algorithm was that both VDH and CDC recommends us to keep the initial contact screening limited to just very close contacts, basically those with the highest risk of exposure. However, because we did not have a known period of communicability, it was really difficult to get the name and number, like the number of people that were potentially exposed. So it was variable. So this slide depicts shows recommendations from a 2005 CDC MMWR regarding the prioritization of screening for contacts. So as you can see, high priority contacts are considered household contacts or individuals with TB risk factors. However, for the focus of our investigation was medium priority contacts. And so we focused the majority of our investigation trying to determine who would fall into this category. So it was determined that the period of exposure was from August 2015 to August 2016. Employees working on the 3rd floor of the same building were considered at highest risk of exposure. Using the table shown here in this slide and guidelines from CDC and VDH, we prioritized contacts based on high, medium, and low priority using a concentric circular model. This was done so that we could limit our screening to individuals at the highest risk of TB exposure. However, this effort was kind of futile. So when looking into the investigation of the building air circulation, it was revealed that the building had a vertical airflow. So what this means is that air traveled from the building upwards past each floor until it reached the very top of the building, where it was recirculated with outside air and would push back downwards. So furthermore, this patient also reported sitting right next to a vent. So it just got better and better. But then to complicate our already complicated investigation, during the exposure period, the firm decided to restructure itself. So several employees were laid off, and a huge population was relocated from different floors and from different buildings. So based on all of this information, we decided to expand our screening to include any employee that sat on the third floor between August 2015 and August 2016. And this is not just sitting on the third floor. If they attended meetings on the third floor, they were also included in our investigation. So before beginning the screening, we met with the administration and employee health nurse to inform them of our investigation. They provided us with the names of employees that met our exposure criteria. Before sending out screening notifications, we conducted information sessions for all staff about TB. We also informed potential contacts via email to maintain their anonymity. Because of the size of our investigation, we asked our Office of Emergency Preparedness and Response to kind of step in and help us coordinate the entire screening. And this here is the form that we used during the patient interviews during the screening. And it asks questions about TB risk factors as well as the symptoms and whether or not they exhibit any. So during this investigation, 149 employees were screened for TB exposure. The majority of those that were screened were male. The employee firm in this, the employee population in this firm was very diverse, with many individuals from foreign countries working at the facility. As TB disease is endemic to a lot of foreign countries, the country of origin was a very important variable to have, and so just so that we can eliminate any other possible sources of exposure. The majority of the employees that were screened listed the United States as their primary country of origin, but however, there was more than a quarter of the screened employees that listed other countries as their country of origin, and a good majority of them were from India and China. Certain risk factors increase the risk for TB infection, such as HIV infection, immunosuppressive therapy, pregnancy, illegal drug use, and history of inadequate TB treatment. Information on these risk factors were collected from employees during the screening. 8 employees reported undergoing immunosuppressive therapy prior to the screening. 7 employees reported having high-risk medical conditions, such as diabetes and cancer. And 1 employee reported being HIV positive. 2 employees also reported having undergone TB treatment in the past, and they reported not having completed that properly. Oh, what's also really interesting to note is that this facility underwent a very similar investigation in 2008 for another active TB patient. A number of the employees that were screened during the 2008 investigation still continue to work at this facility. And 9 of those employees during this investigation reported being screened in 2008. And all 9 of them reported the patient that was screened, that was identified in 2008 as a past known TB contact. So for some results, out of the 149 employees that were screened, 8 came back positive or screened positive for TB exposure. So of the 8 employees, there was 1 employee that was American-born with no history of foreign travel. This patient chose to undergo LTBI treatment, however, a negative reaction with the treatment medication led to his hospitalization, and he was unable to complete the treatment. But what is really interesting and very important to note about this patient was that this patient was the only employee that tested positive that sat directly next to our index patient. So due to this patient's country of origin and location to the original patient, there's a really strong association that this patient was exposed to TB from the index patient. So for the other 7 employees that tested positive, they were mostly of Asian and Hispanic heritage. Two of those seven that screened positive refused LTBI treatment, two of them successfully also completed the treatment. And 2 had reported a prior positive PPD. And we lost 1 employee to follow up, so we don't know what happened to him. So in conclusion, at the completion of our investigation, we were still unable to determine the total number of employees that were exposed to TB. It is possible that a number of employees that may have been exposed did not receive the screening. It's also possible that employees that may have been exposed no longer work at the facility and did not get the notification for the screening. TB was also likely transmitted from our index patient to patient B, the American-born that tested positive. However, to determine a true association, we would need to conduct a DNA fingerprint of all the TB isolates from both patients and to see if they would match. But that has not been done. So based on the challenges that we faced during this investigation, we recommend that TB screening should be required before employment at all facilities, especially for companies with a diverse employee makeup. This information should also be documented and maintained in the employee health record. Furthermore, employees and employers both should receive routine education about health and well-being. Employees should recognize when they are too sick to work, and employers should provide paid sick leave and should also encourage their staff to remain at home if they are sick. The development of robust employee health programs or employing an employee health nurse would help guide staff members of infectious diseases and other issues in the office. So I would like to end by acknowledging the Henrico Department of Health, who were the leaders in this investigation. And that's all I have, so thank you for listening. Well, we're kind of recommending it should be a part of the steps that they take before starting a job at any facility. So it's not just this facility as all, but it's mostly in facilities that have, like, really diverse populations, just to prevent exposures like this from occurring, because this facility had this twice, and it seems to be a trend. It's a big... And we did look at that for this facility, and it was really interesting because for this patient felt really pressured to come to work, even when exhibiting fever and that persistent cough. Financial issues as well as pressure from her managers caused her to keep on coming in. So she's still reported coming consistently.
Does that
We actually hoped that this changed in 2008, but it didn't. So we'll see what happens now. No, not this particular patient.
Well, they really have a responsibility.
Yeah, for this patient, there was just a spouse, and that spouse also tested positive. So we controlled that transmission into for just the couple itself. So the company was not very involved at that part of the screening, and they had they did not know whether or not the so we did inform them, but they did not follow up, and so it just kind of ended there, unfortunately, as much as the case with a lot of these investigations.